So welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod, episode 40.
I know, I feel like we should have planned a 40-themed episode. But
that's 40, that's
it's
like
not bad, is it?
Four lots of 10.
Yeah, exactly, or other mathematical equations.
Or one more than 39.
Yeah, it's not bad. We'll do a special when we hit 50.
It does feel like a milestone, 40, but it's not 50, is it?
No, not really. Otherwise, if we start doing a special episode at every multiple of 10, it sort of diminishes the actual milestones.
Yeah, but it does mean we've done another 10.
Yeah, it does. Right, that's enough of that.
Right.
We are back with what I think is now becoming a series. Obviously, our species-specific episodes have, I think, become our bread and butter, the ones that we, I think, probably done more than any other single type of episode. But we are now pretty much reaching what I think can be called another series, and that is habitat-specific episodes. I think we've covered wetlands, seagrass meadows.
We've done a thing on peatlands, haven't we?
The oak tree was sort of a habitat episode, yeah, as we delved into all the insects it supports. So this is another one where we're looking at a whole habitat ecosystem rather than one animal, and we're going to be focusing on the humble hedgerow.
Hedgerows. And when we came up with this idea, I thought, yeah, we were actually a bit short for time this week, and I thought, we'll do hedgerows because it'll be, I reckon we can, you know, crack out something on hedgerows quite, you know,
quickly.
I've got more information about hedgerows.
Much research on hedgerows.
That I'm not even sure that I can, are we going to get through it all?
No, I think we're going to have to be quite picky about what we choose to talk about.
And you would have thought it would have been quite a simple thing talking about hedgerows. You know, they are, you know,
you see them at the end of your garden.
A habitat, they support lots of wildlife. They connect, you know.
This is spoilers now.
Yeah, okay. I better save it. Shall I save it?
Yeah, save it.
Okay, we're going to do hedgerows.
I don't think either of us have any catch-up today.
None at all.
Because I was cat-sitting. You've been away. I was cat-sitting for you last week because you were out photographing birds and stuff.
Yeah, I was sitting on the edge of a lake for 2 days photographing kingfishers.
Yeah, that, and geese.
And a lot of geese, which was lovely, actually, because it's probably the closest experience of a kingfisher that I've ever had.
Some cracking photos.
And first time, actually, I've seen two together in one spot as
We saw two in...
Yeah, we kind of fighting down the river there on Keyhaven.
But Keyhaven, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, these two are actually sitting together and, yeah. So,
chilling.
Yeah, managed to get some lovely photos of kingfishers. So, yes, that was a nice couple of days.
Whereas I sat here looking after your two cats.
Yes, you did.
Which was also lovely.
Which was great, because also you always end up when looking after one of them after they've been poorly. We had a poorly cat, and you came, sort of looked after him at the end of that, and now he's not poorly.
Yeah, I'm convinced they don't want me to cat sit every time I'm coming around.
Anyway, enough about that.
Otherwise, so I don't have any catch
up. You don't have any at all.
Surprise. So let's go straight into
hedgerows. Oh, actually, you have a little bit of catch up. You're training for a marathon.
Yeah, it's not wildlife.
No, I know, but it's still day catch-up, isn't it?
I think I got a bit too excited watching the Olympics and decided I'd sign up for a marathon, and suddenly realised it's actually quite a long way to run.
Yeah, but you do have to do quite a lot of training as well.
Yeah, it should be fine.
Sorry, it's not until next April. You've got enough time.
So, yeah, that's my only life update, really.
Right, well, let's crack straight on into hedgerows, then.
Let's do it.
Do you want to describe what a hedgerow is?
Well, yeah, okay. What is a hedgerow? So normally it includes multiple components, the actual like hedge itself. But people, I don't think, would necessarily assume that the hedgerow also features things like the banks, the trees, walls, fences, gates, all of those things that are sort of in the vicinity of the actual hedge itself, sort of are part of what we would describe as a hedgerow. They can be ancient or newly planted with literally like a single species of sort of shrub. Is it a shrub? Single species or be made up of all sorts, like a real nice biodiverse mixture of plants and trees and things like that as well. It's actually estimated that about 40% of our UK hedges, which is 95,000 miles, which is quite a lot for just under half, are ancient and sort of described as species rich. And typically hedges will fall into two categories, managed, which essentially means that the trees no longer take their sort of natural shape, so obviously they're being trimmed and, you know, cultivated, Or we were trying to work out how to say this. I think it's relict, or...
I think it is relict. Yeah.
Which is essentially where trees were planted as hedges, but are no longer managed. So they're in there, but they're not being managed tools. They're not being cut and shaped and things like that. I think that's probably...
I've got a little bit definition. Of history of hedges. Shall I do a bit of history? We think or believe that the Romans might have planted the first hedges in Britain. But actually, most of the ancient hedges date from Saxon times. And actually, the word hedge comes from the Anglo-Saxon word for enclosure.
Oh, that makes sense.
Which was haig or gehaig. And this is where we get the word hedge. So, majority of the hedges planted in Saxon times were... It was a bit contentious, actually, because their farming was organised into strip farming, which was strips of fields with just grass verges, and each strip was a furrow long, which is where you get the word furlong from. And people were given a number of strips to farm by the lord of the manor. But systems changed in the Middle Ages as they started to farm livestock more, and the rich and the aristocracy started to enclose their land with hedges and boundaries. And actually, it did become a bit contentious because obviously the peasants, bless them, lost a lot of their land for farming. So it did affect them. And there were a few rebellions and in the Middle Ages, there were lots of
hedge wars,
uprisings. Well, actually, yes, and tearing hedges down that had to be, you know, they had to be suppressed by the army and soldiers and everything. So there was quite a lot of friction about hedges. But anyway, that's how they started. So a lot of the ancient hedges do sort of go back to Anglo-Saxon times.
Yeah, and I mean, and, you've touched on it there. I think most people would associate hedges as like a border or a divider. You see them around farms, you even see them around gardens, and they do act as like a division.
Yeah, and it was
land.
We've talked about this again in the past, where obviously livestock farming became much more profitable, farming sheep for wool, and obviously the woolen industry became much more profitable than grain. So and the woolen industry in this country obviously absolutely boomed. So the rich enclosed their land, farmed sheep, put hedges and boundaries up, and that use of the land changed a lot. And so our hedgerows were born in that time, really. But they do, you know, there are examples of boundaries and hedges going back into the Bronze Age, you know, 4,000 years ago. So
I mean, it's a very convenient way to divide up land, isn't it?
So hedgerows have this incredible historical
significance
and background, and probably more so in this country than most, actually. We've got thousands and thousands of miles of hedgerows, and as you said, 40% of it is still ancient.
Yeah.
So they've been around a long time and hugely important. And, of course, we're going to talk about why they're important.
Yeah, so obviously stepping away from cultural and sort of historical importance to the sort of natural and biodiversity importance.
I'm really laughing because we've got one of my cats is here. It's all curled up on a little cat bed here, and I think he's snoring. I'm not sure whether the microphone's
picking that up.
Doodles is snoring down there. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's for the distraction.
Better than him scratching at the door.
Yeah.
So we'll move into the actual importance of hedgerows for wildlife, nature, and also a little bit of climate stuff as well.
Yeah.
I think the obvious place to start, and probably the thing that, you know, is very clear to most people, is that they just provide a habitat for a lot of species.
Yeah.
They're actually a 130 biodiversity action plan species that are closely associated with hedges. And I actually didn't realise that they are the UK's largest priority habitat.
Yes, I found that a really big statistic,
makes sense. I mean, they provide homes to 80% of our woodland birds. They provide a home for such a variety of species, nesting birds, hibernating
500
hedgehogs.
Plant species, 60 species of nesting bird, and many hundreds of invertebrates, and almost all of our native small mammal species have been recorded as being supported by hedgerows.
Yeah, and I mean, it's no surprise that hedgehogs, like a hedgerow, We have a whole episode on hedgehogs if you want to go learn more about them after this episode, obviously. Yeah. Don't stop now. But yeah, all of our small, well, most of our small mammals, you know, dormice and things like that. As far as invertebrates, it's no real surprise, but it varies from, obviously, like the pollinating insects that will use them for food sources to lots of the hedgerows will contain things like old oak and old trees, yeah. which then all the beetle larvae absolutely love. Which then obviously the more insects they're supporting, the more food there is for all the nesting birds and, yeah. and all the other animals that live there.
And bats, of course, very important for bats.
Yeah, and, well, I was going to move on to the species that don't like physically live in a hedgerow, but will still use them. So we've mentioned food sources for insects and small mammals. But yeah, bats will actually use them as a like a highway.
Yeah.
And I think almost every episode we've done talking about animals, like species specific episodes, we've talked about habitat fragmentation yeah. and how it's such a massive problem that you've got populations of species sort of then just separated and they can't cross each other and, you know, interbreed or anything like that.
Yeah, all through obviously it being broken through development
yeah,
and agriculture, yeah.
Things like that. And the hedgerow like network almost acts as like a little highway system connecting pockets of better habitat. So it allows bats to move from their roost to good
yeah,
feeding ground.
I've also read that
and
bats use them as a navigational aid as well.
Yeah, which a bit is like
really,
rivers.
Then, yeah, yeah, which is really interesting.
Going back very quickly, obviously we just mentioned large portions of agricultural land being sort of fragmented. When you think that, or fragmenting the other habitats, if you think that 70% of the UK's landscape is farmland, if all of those strips of farmland are bordered by hedges, that's a potential for a huge amount of habitat without yeah. then infringing on the farmland that we need yeah. to grow our food. So it's a really valuable way for providing these sort of biodiversity rich habitats in sort of collaboration with our own need for using the land for food production.
Yeah, they also, this I also found fascinating, and something I hadn't thought about is that hedgerows can break wind speeds.
Yes.
So that's really important in exposed areas, and without hedgerows, insects can often struggle to fly on very windy nights, which reduces the amount of prey available for bats. So I hadn't thought about that. Obviously, they are windbreaks.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about that as far as, you know, helping other invertebrates
animals.
And insects and
bats.
Obviously bats
yeah.
as well. So that I found really interesting.
And, I mean, we've spoken about how they house like our small mammals, which it's interesting because it benefits things like birds of prey and the predators because it provides a home for larger populations of the food that they like. So it brings those animals into the area. But then it also provides a refuge for them. So
yeah,
small mammals and things that are being predated on can dash into a hedgerow to hide themselves. So they're both an important food source for predators and an important safety net for the prey.
Yeah.
So again, it's just seems to benefit all levels of the food chain.
Yeah, they're also, I mean, from my love is birds and native birds, and hedgerows are hugely important for our native birds. There's a farmland bird index. I think I may have talked about that
before. I
think
before. We have mentioned it.
There are 19 birds on this farmland bird index, and they are birds that are used as indicator species to ascertain the changes of agriculture and the use of the land and what effect that is having on our on the population
right,
of those
can,
birds.
You can call them FBI birds.
FBI birds. So 16 of the 19 birds on that farmland bird index are associated with hedgerows, and 10 of them, of these indicator species, use hedgerows as their primary habitat. So they're hugely important for those birds, and they're also hugely important for gathering that data, which tells us all about those populations, either decline or increase, and it's a really good indicator of what's happening to the land and what effect that is having on our biodiversity
yeah,
and on our bird life.
Also,
you know,
have to remember that, you know, these birds are obviously associated with farmland
yeah.
to be part of this index, and a greater diversity of bird species benefits farms as well
yeah.
because they're brilliant pest control and
yeah.
things like that. So it's
absolutely
this is actually quite a nice topic because it's not one of those where we want to rewild loads of land that perhaps people want to build on. Actually, hedgerows benefit farmers and
yeah.
nature, so it's
yeah.
one of those really nice habitats that works very well both for people and for nature.
And what is interesting about that, them being indicator species, is I look at this list, and I'm a great one for watching the birds that are on the red list in this country, the native birds, and there's a lot of birds on this index that are, I know, are red listed birds. Starlings, linnets, lapwings,
yellowhammers,
turtle doves, skylarks, tree sparrows, greenfinches now, would you believe, are now on the red list. So there's an awful lot of birds on this farmland index that are red listed birds, and a lot of that is down to obviously the habitat loss
and fragmentation.
And a lot of those birds are reliant on that habitat of hedgerows. And we're going to go on to the threats and what's happened to our hedgerows a bit later on. But this is a sort of real indication of how important hedgerows are.
Yeah, and I mentioned it, that they support 80% of our woodland birds. Yeah. I think you, therefore, being a woodland bird, assume that they must just live exclusively in the woods and not consider the fact that the hedgerow bordering that woodland might actually be where they nest.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I found a stat or a bit of information that said that when looking at this farmland bird index, I feel like we said those three words a lot, the number of species as well as the number of individual birds actually increases with the size of the hedge and the diversity of woody plant species in there as well. So there is actually a nice correlation that bigger hedges, more woody plants in the hedge, results in greater bird diversity and bigger populations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the content of those hedges. I mean, there are different types of hedges. You get a hawthorn hedge, and the differences in the hedges relate to the different species of birds that thrive in them. So hawthorn hedges are really, really excellent places for blackbirds and thrushes and bullfinches. Then you get blackthorn hedges, which are abundant in the UK countryside. And you'll get things like yellowhammers and whitethroats really like that environment. Field maple, where you'll get chaffinches and dunnocks and robins. And they find cover and protection amongst the real dense leaves of that kind of hedge. Beech hedges, great tits, blue tits and black caps love them. And then you get privet hedges with sparrows and wrens. They have a very dense structure, and wrens particularly like to be in amongst the real...
And they're so little, aren't they?
Yeah, a real sort of dense thicket of
foliage.
And so all of these different hedges, which you find all across the countryside, are different environments, different birds like them, and that makes, again, that variety of hedgerow really important supporting all those different types of birds, because they have different needs of their food sources and their cover and the environment they like. So
I think, following on from that then, I'll just touch very quickly on the structure of a hedge itself, because this is where the diversity of different plants and trees and stuff really comes into play. So it's like we mentioned, it includes quite a wide range. It's not just the hedge itself. It varies from, well, I've got the nice word herbaceous vegetation at the bottom to sort of woody shrubs, but as well the sort of vegetation at the base and all that sort of stuff really comes into play. So for example, trees often make up a good chunk of a hedgerow, and I've mentioned that, you know, some of them will have oak, but same with willow. They can support over 400 insect species, which then obviously in turn benefit birds and bats
and other mammals.
You then, I think the bit that, you know, most characteristically defines a hedgerow is the diverse sort of shrub layer, and you've obviously touched on all the variety of types of sort of shrub and hedge plants. But with the greater diversity of plant, obviously then consequently you'll have a higher diversity of insects and birds. So just in general, diversity means more food, more habitat, more species. But that also in turn relates to a structural complexity. So some want sort of nice, almost like soft nesting material, some want really woody nesting material. So again, you're looking at really complex mixture of plants that make up a hedge. But the bit that always, I think, gets overlooked is the hedge margin, and that is the bit of land between the bottom of a hedge and then any cultivated or human sort of disturbance, whether that's farmland or, I don't know, like urban development. So it's that little border between the bottom of the hedge and then developed land, essentially. And having that margin, or having a margin, is really, really crucial, because it essentially protects the hedge from things like pesticide runoff, mainly chemicals and road runoff and stuff like that. So having like a nice dense vegetation strip between the hedge and cultivated land is really important because it protects the insects, protects the plants, especially from things like pesticides, which then take out the insects, removes the food sources. And I think what's really interesting about all of this is, despite how complex a hedge seems, whilst a bit of maintenance is required while it sort of develops, once it's established, they are actually incredibly low cost to maintain because they just function as a nice ecosystem themselves. So they seem really complicated, all these different plants, all this different structural complexity. But once it's set up and established, they really don't need much from us, and they support all of these different species. And yeah, it's just incredible, I think. I never considered how much there was to a hedge.
No, there is a lot to a hedge, and an awful lot of benefits that, again, I hadn't even thought about. This was one: can reduce the risk of bovine tuberculosis. Did you read about that? Which I thought was really interesting. Hedgerows appear to be a key factor for improved biosecurity. Hedge poor farms, those with few hedgerows and large field sizes, have been found to have a greater risk of bovine tuberculosis outbreaks than the hedge-rich farms. So I'm guessing, I mean, obviously I haven't put a reason why that is. I don't know whether you have any thoughts on that, but apparently it's a fact. It has been, has that been analysed? Maybe it's just the spread of disease is stopped.
Yeah.
Within, a barrier of a hedge. I probably should have looked that up a bit more. But I found that quite fascinating. And, of course, we talk a lot about carbon storage and climate change. They're ever so good things for storing carbon, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got quite a lot of sort of climate benefits. Yeah. So there's stats that say, mature hedgerow will store between 112 to 158 tonnes of carbon per hectare. I've also got that it's been suggested, based on data, that 2,000 miles of new hedgerows would absorb 1,287 tonnes of carbon every single year, assuming an average width of 4 metres per hedgerow. These are quite hard to visualise.
Yeah, they are, because you've done it in tonnes, and I've got a stat there that says a new hedgerow may store 600 to 800 kilograms of carbon per year per 1,000 metres for up to 20 years. I mean, it's really difficult to equate that understand that, what that actually means.
But it just emphasises the fact that
it sounds a lot.
Yeah, it sounds
and that's,
good.
And that's good enough for me.
It emphasises that they are a good carbon storage. I love the idea our net zero target of 2050 is just a long way off, but I won't go into that. But I'd love it if it was...
Is that another government promise, you mean?
Yeah, it'd be better if our net zero target was like 2030 or something.
Yeah.
But it's been advised that if the UK was to increase hedgerows by 40%, that would help meet our net zero targets. But that would also mean planting 200,000 kilometres of new hedgerows, which... I love the idea that's the equivalent to half the length of the UK road network.
Wow.
So that's a lot of hedgerows.
That's a lot, yeah.
But it's not actually just the plants themselves. They really benefit the soil. And typically soil benefits from having diverse plants anyway, so yeah, it sort of makes sense. But hedgerow soils accumulate sort of organic carbon over time. And a quite recent study found that soil organic carbon stocks were 32% greater on average in hedgerow soils compared to cropland.
Yeah.
So having them bordering your crops is a really good way for farmers to increase the carbon storage of their land.
Yeah, and ironically, they started to take hedgerows down because they were trying to increase their
productivity
in the usable land. But actually... hedgerows obviously increase the population of crop predators.
Yeah.
So I've got a paragraph here. Hedgerows increase populations of pest predators and parasitic species such as spiders, predatory beetles and parasitic wasps, and showed that the abundance of wolf spiders, rove beetles and money spiders are all important crop pest predators. So they're natural pest control.
Yeah, I mean, anything that increases...
And, of course, the farmers started to tear them down, and I think they're now beginning to realise, because I think we'll go on to the positives that we've found out about, that they've started to realise that actually they're much better having hedges around their fields than not.
I mean, there's even arguments to be made that they provide shelter for livestock and things like that. So it even benefits livestock farming. But the last little thing I'll touch on benefits of hedges, because we've been chatting about them for ages, is that it would be remiss of me not to mention rivers. And they hedgerows actually act as a brilliant natural flood management system. Yeah. Obviously, we spoke about soil. They increase the ability for the soil to take in water. But they also act as their own buffer strip if they're planted between, say, crops or urban development and rivers. They essentially filter out a lot of the, you know, chemicals and stuff in the water before it hits the river. So it acts as a really good river protecting system as well, which I thought, you know, it'd be rude if I didn't mention that, really.
Well, you actually haven't mentioned the Rivers Trust, so that's fine.
Don't worry, that's later on. in that case, so I think in summary, hedgerows are good. They support
hedgerows are great.
A huge number of species. They benefit our carbon storage and our climate goals. They benefit farmers, and the sort of more complex and diverse that a hedge is, the better it is in general.
And actually, if you want to get more wildlife into your garden, plant a hedge.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go on to that as well. We should probably just mention like what's been happening to our hedges, why they've become such an important topic for conversation and conservation. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, they were close.
It would have been a good line if I could speak, because sadly we've actually lost a huge number of
hedges. Differing stats on that. I don't know what you've got. I think I've got here 118,000 miles of hedgerows have disappeared since 1950.
Yeah, I did also get that stat.
The loss has slowed since the 90s, but neglect, damage and removal remain significant threats.
Yeah, and it sort of... I mean, we've mentioned it in a lot of episodes. A lot of the loss was due to the intensification of agriculture, as you sort of touched on earlier. They wanted to use more land for crops and livestock, and so they chopped down the hedges. And the real rapid decline sort of happened since 1950, and I say thankfully slowed slightly after the 1990s, but we haven't managed them very well at all.
No, we haven't, and things like ploughing too near to the hedges have actually also, if they haven't taken the hedge down, they've been ploughing too close to a hedge, and that destroys all the herbaceous vegetation that grows in the hedge base. It then damages the roots and the hedge structure. So that intense agriculture that we've again talked about many times in many episodes has had a significant effect on the health of hedges. Even if they haven't removed them, the health of the hedges has actually deteriorated quite a lot. So you talked about this bad management, and I'm sure you're going to go on to that bit as far as the management of hedges has been a big threat.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we mention intense agriculture, but when you look at the stat that we said earlier, you know, 70% of the UK's landscape is farmland, it makes sense that it's having such an impact on everything, because it's the vast majority of our land. Just a few more sort of sad stats. We said that, you know, the loss of hedgerows declined, like it slowed down a little bit after the 1990s, but one study between the 1984 and 1990 showed that hedgerow length in England declined by 20%. So that's a huge drop in 6 years. And in Wales this was 25%. And I have to be fair, I've got lots of stats, but they are all sort of mind-blowing, just how many miles or kilometres of hedgerow we've lost. But because of that, essentially, it has led to an increase in hedgerow incentive schemes, which we'll talk about right at the end, about people who are trying to bring hedgerows back to their former glory.
Yeah, just one final mention on the threats, and again, it relates to intense agriculture, is that obviously herbicides sprayed too close to a hedge. We've used a lot of pesticides and herbicides, and that's killed off a lot of the plant diversity at the base of hedges and had a big impact on the soil quality at the base of hedges. And again, that's affected the quality of the hedge, and they've deteriorated and they haven't done well because of pesticides. So, but things are changing.
I've got one last thing to say, actually. We've said that, you know, lack of management.
Yeah.
I think the important thing to emphasize is that sort of a management like practices are not standardized.
Yeah.
So it differs across all of the UK. And in some areas, the sort of lack of management has resulted in the hedgerows being reclassified as tree lines or gappy shrubs,
yeah,
was one. And so once they've been reclassified, they then lose some protection, or they will then lose the sort of incentive to manage them because they're not identified as being an important,
yeah,
hedgerow. So sort of the is we're missing a nice standardized protocol of exactly these are the hedgerows and here's how we need to look after them. And so it's just resulted,
yeah,
in a real patchwork of different health of hedges across the whole of the UK.
Yeah, and actually there's two different things in that respect as well, because some hedges have been undermanaged.
Yeah.
So effectively, if you undermanage a hedge, it becomes a tree line.
Yeah, and it will just develop too far.
And if you overmanage them, if you cut them too often, then it reduces the value of the hedge to the wildlife and it threatens the structure of the hedge. So there are two ways that we are badly managing. We're either undermanaging them and just letting them go, and then they become a line of trees, or we overmanage them and we cut them too often. We affect the wildlife. We affect the way that the hedge regenerates and grows, because we just, you know, a farmer will go along with a big mechanical cutter and cut the top,
yeah,
of it off, often at the wrong time of year for the wildlife, the nesting birds, etc., etc.
I think I think when you mentioned that, you know, if humans don't manage the habitat in a certain way, it overdevelops and we lose,
yeah,
that habitat, and then people will think, well, then how did it ever exist without us?
Yeah.
Obviously, pre-humans, we had a lot of grazing animals that, you know, like deer and stuff, that would then reduce.
Yeah.
They eat the young trees. The trees don't grow properly. You keep a nice hedgerow, and so in areas where we don't have a lot of deer, and especially if it's then not livestock farm, because obviously livestock graze, sometimes they overgraze,
yeah,
and that's a problem. It's a real balance,
it's a balance,
and we've disrupted
balance.
That balance. So it's important to recognise that these habitats would exist in a healthy balance between trees, woodland and hedgerows if we weren't here.
Yeah.
It's just we've disrupted it, and now it's on us to make sure that balance is maintained, because the nature can't.
Well, I think things are changing. Not only, hopefully, the government is recognising the fact that hedgerows are really important, but so are the farmers again.
Yeah.
So I think things are changing, and there are some really good positive projects and campaigns and restoration projects that are going on for hedgerows, and it's actually I got quite encouraged by,
yeah,
reading about it.
It was good.
I think you've got probably more on this than I have, but there are some really encouraging signs, aren't there?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the like wins came back in May 2024, and it is important to sort of caveat that this was a incentive or a sort of regulations that were put in place by the old government. So we have to then hope that the new government continues with these,
yeah,
and hopefully even makes them better, and it's not something that, you know, we go back on. You would hope, being the new government's aiming for quite a lot of environmental stuff, so you would hope that wouldn't happen.
It's a slight concern, because I read obviously some of the regulations that they were changing were done up to April 2024, and then of course
this is in May.
We've got a new government now,
yeah.
So
they're always liable to change, but as is everything in government. But it was a slight win that in May 2024. We got essentially new management of hedgerow regulations.
Yeah.
And the two key components of these regulations is something I've mentioned earlier, is a buffer strip. So
yeah,
a 2 meter wide buffer strip must be maintained around hedgerows, free from cultivation, pesticides and fertilizers. So as I mentioned earlier, they act as almost like a protection zone for the hedges. It stops all the pesticides,
yeah,
and sprays and road runoff and all the horrible things from our land impacting the health of the
hedgerow.
I wonder
how they calculated that 2 meters was far enough.
Anyway. But so that's something that needs to be sort of put in place.
Yeah.
And then also a cutting ban. So hedgerow cutting would be banned between the 1st of March and the 31st of August, mainly to help protect all the nesting birds, because
yeah,
that's obviously the nesting season. You don't want to be going in there with a big old hedge trimmer, especially when we've already said how many rare and red-listed birds are relying on our hedgerows. So that's a really good thing that these regulations are being put in place. There are a few problems with it. So essentially there are some exemptions to these protections, despite the fact, and this is the encouraging part of the sad bit, strong public and farmer support for not bringing these exemptions back. Essentially, they are that fields under 2 hectares of hedgerows under 5 years will not be required to have a buffer strip. And 70% of consultation respondents said no to this, including over 50% of the farmers who responded. So it's, again, one of those encouraging signs that the farmers who are involved in this don't want the exemptions. They want the hedgerows to be protected, yeah, and they're on board with, yeah, it. So yeah, the regulations are a good step in the right direction, but it's a bit more work that needs to be done to make sure that all hedgerows are protected. Also, doesn't extend to things like hedgerows outside of agricultural land, and we also need to make sure those get the same level of protection. It's slightly harder when you haven't got farmers around to manage them, yeah, and sort of fight their corner, but it's one of those nice positive things that there are farmers involved and farmers very pro-hedge.
Yeah, and there's some really good organisations, aren't there? HedgeLink is
a massive one.
A really big organisation with some really good collaborations with farmers and wildlife trusts. A really active organisation that meets regularly and works together completely in the interests of UK hedgerows. And there's some really good stuff if you go onto the HedgeLink
website. It's so cool that there's an organisation dedicated to UK hedgerows.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all about, again, we've talked a lot about education and knowledge, and that's a big part of their project is not just collaboration with organisations, but it's also educating. And I think they're doing it in conjunction with Tree Council, and it's called the Life on the Hedge programme that's going on. And that goes on apparently until March 2025, and it's all about increasing the quantity of trees and hedgerows planted and managed across England. Again, lots of educational things, working with and training over 150 farmers and landowners to manage hedgerows better. So education,
yeah, and training and
training. And I think, again, a bit like the rewilding, with farmers coming round to the fact that leaving parts of their farms to go wild with wildflowers is actually really beneficial. It's the same with hedgerows. Yeah, I think they're realising what we were saying earlier on. It's actually really beneficial for their crops to have really healthy hedgerows bordering all around their agricultural land. So
yeah, and you could see the point of view where, right, I own this amount of land. I want to maximise growing, yeah, crops on every square inch because it's how they make their money. But when the training and education comes into it, actually, if you leave X amount of meters around, yeah, with the hedgerows, you might increase your productivity, yeah, by whatever percentage. It really shows that it makes a lot of sense.
And I think it's also very encouraging as we go through these episodes to continually read about farmers coming on board with all of this. Yeah. They're and it's not just the odd one here and there. They're all realizing the benefits of all of these changes for their biodiversity, but also for their, you know, the commercial side of their land, yeah, as well, and that's the important thing. They have to make a living, but they can do the two at the same, you know, together.
They're not sacrificing one for
absolutely
the other.
And often it's beneficial. So
it is absolutely essential because, say, 70% of our land is farmland, yeah, so they are looking after such a chunk of, yeah, land that without them on board, rewilding, make sure we've got, yeah, healthy hedges, reducing pesticides, all that sort of stuff, then our land is sort of in a lot of trouble because, yeah, the rest of it can't compensate for all of the agricultural land. So
yeah,
they are,
particularly as, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they were the ones tearing the hedges down to create more, you know, more land. But they're now realising that that's not such a good thing. So
yeah, and I mean, alongside the education, training, regulation changes, there's obviously the actual direct conservation that takes place across the country, and lots of brilliant organisations are involved in that, lots of wildlife trusts. Obviously, I'll mention a Rivers Trust. So there was a really cool project by Norfolk Rivers Trust called the Ingworth Hedge Planting, where they worked with a local farmer in Ingworth, where I'm going to assume that's somewhere in Norfolk, to essentially restore a historic hedgerow. And during the course of this project, they provided 1,800 metres of hedging consisting of 9,267 plants.
Wow.
Which is just...
That's fantastic.
They worked with a local farmer. They had some funding from Carlsberg and the WWF Partnership, as well as National Trust's Riverlands project, and essentially helped restore this ancient
hedgerow. Which is fantastic. And it's you mentioning about farmers applying for funding. I've got a little bit here that says... The government has promised to create or restore 48,000 kilometres of hedgerows by 2037 and 72,000 kilometres of hedgerows by 2050 under the new Environmental Improvement Plan. And farmers are encouraged to apply for funding to rejuvenate and create hedgerows. They're urged to cut hedges less frequently to allow flowering and seed or nut production and allow the bases of hedges to become dense and wide, therefore providing cover for small mammals such as mice and shrews. So they're actually, there is funding for them that they can apply for to, you know, to help improve the hedges on their land. And I think that's, again, we've got to hope that this new government
keeps it going, keeps it, that makes and, it even better,
or makes it better,
put more money into it, bigger incentives.
But at the moment it appears to be that that is the case, that there is a big push for you know, for supplying funding for farmers to do that, and that's a fantastic
thing. That is brilliant. I also have a little bit of citizen science.
Oh, do you? I don't have any citizen science.
I say that there's a slight caveat. The citizen science here is understandably geared slightly more towards landowners and farmers, people who likely have hedges that need managing. As far as individuals, the best thing you can do is go plant your hedge. If you have a hedge in a garden, in your own garden, there are, we'll put links in the show notes, there are loads of resources on how to manage your hedge for mammals, birds, insects. Yeah. So the best thing for individuals listening to do who aren't owners of massive land with huge hedgerows, but you might have one bordering your garden, I swear we used to in one of our houses, is there's lots of resources on things you can do to make your hedgerow better for wildlife. Exactly like we've spoken about before, for improving your garden for wildlife, just in a slightly smaller scale.
And actually, you'd be surprised that, you know, there are lots of small, if you only got a small plot and a small garden, you can still put, you could still plant small
shrubs
and low-growing hedges and you know, to border around parts of your garden, which will have a huge benefit for
wildlife. Yeah, especially if it ends up being the main border instead of a full-on fence, because it means that hedgehogs can then get between different bits of land.
So you don't always think of a hedge as being, you know, 6 foot tall and 100 foot wide. It doesn't have to be that.
Hedge. Yeah. But yeah, we'll stick some resources in there if you do have one and would like to improve its productivity for wildlife. Citizen science wise, though, there are hedgerow health surveys that people can get involved in. The one that is designed more for farmers and landowners actually just involves an app by the People's Trust for Endangered Animals. It's called the Healthy Hedgerow App.
Oh, okay.
And essentially, it's like a quick survey you can do about. I haven't downloaded the app, but not being a farmer. But essentially, you fill out a survey. It's meant to be quite quick, and it will quickly give you an estimated sort of ranking for the health of your hedgerow, and it will generate a management plan for what you need to do to improve or keep.
I like
that. So it's a way of them quickly assessing the health of a hedgerow and what do they need to do to either improve its health or maintain its health and things like that. So that's really cool. It's nice when it's a very low barrier. You know, you just download an app and fill out a survey and then know what to do with your hedges. But then there's also the Great British Hedgerow Survey, not very easy to say, which is actually quite simple, but it's designed to collect enough information to give sort of a rough assessment of hedgerow health and then hopefully be used to advise future management. This is designed for both land managers, but also like wildlife groups who are interested in just the habitat quality in their area. And I'll stick a link. There's loads of information on the People's Trust for Endangered Animals website. You log in, download. I think it's a paper survey rather than an app, and you just fill it out, and it will give your area on a scale. It's called like the Adams Scale of Hedgerow Health or something like that. And it will tell you how healthy is the habitat and then what needs to be done. I'm guessing if you're a wildlife group and it's not your own hedge, you then have to approach the landowner and be like, we've done a survey, you need to do better for your hedges. But it's nice to know that there are ways for people to assess it and actually understand the quality of hedgerow in their area.
Yeah.
But I thought that was cool. There's actually loads on the People's Trust for Endangered Animals website. They have a lot of information.
I also want you to think about how often, when you're walking down an urban street and you walk past hedgerows, and you hear birds in hedgerows.
Rustling.
And normally sparrows and
house wrens.
And you hear the chattering of birds in hedgerows, and it always makes me smile when I walk past a hedgerow and hear all of that bird life and wildlife in there.
But
never see it. You just hear them chattering away in a hedgerow. So I love a hedgerow.
Yeah, they are fantastic things. And like I said, we sort of assumed it'd be a quick, easy thing to talk about hedges. And I could have gone on for another hour about the species they support, because it's just...
It is incredible.
And just so convenient.
And,
as well.
And again,
we're not asking you to plant a forest. Yeah. We just want some hedges.
And it does sort of relate to a lot of the things that we've talked about in previous episodes about reconnecting habitats and reconnecting that fragmented habitat, and that's why hedgerows are really important. So it's really encouraging, having done this research, to see that there's a big push to restore them and manage them better, manage the existing ancient ones that have been there for 800 years, some of them, which is incredible. So yeah, we like a hedgerow.
We love a hedgerow, the humble hedgerow. Protect it, improve it.
Yeah.
There's not too much else to say, really.
No, I think that's done.
Yeah, so...
I've really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, me too. And I will just do the slightly more influencer thing that we always forget to say, but we do now have our own Instagram account for the podcast. It's just at the Birdie Bug Pod. It is currently a little bit sparse. We only set it up last week.
You got a bit of work to do on that
But there's going to be some cool content, hopefully some like behind-the-scenes stuff and some clips from episodes, and it's just a nice bit. It was also a good spot if people want to come and engage, comment, and send us messages. So,
and you'll get the odd picture of the studio cat.
Yeah. So we do now have the podcast has its own space on Instagram now. So if you want to go and hit follow, that would be really cool. But otherwise, as always, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you.
Thank you for listening to our 40th episode.
Yeah, and all about hedges.
And we'll catch you next time. Thanks very much.
Bye.